Our speaker today is Dr. William Pierce, the chairman of the National Alliance, which is the world's foremost organization working for the long-term interest of white Americans and for people of European ancestry wherever they may live.
Hello. There are some interesting things going on around the world. I want to describe a few of these things for you and then tie them together and make a few predictions. Let's begin with Australia. Police in Sydney, Australia's largest city, are trying to cope with a new problem: gang rapes of young white girls by gangs of non-white immigrants. More than 70 white girls, ranging in age from 13 to 18, have been abducted from Sydney suburbs and subjected to exceptionally brutal gang rapes during the past 2 years. The frequency of the rapes is on the rise, and they are spreading from Sydney to other Australian cities. In an incident 3 weeks ago in Guildford, a residential suburb of Perth, Australia's fourth largest city on the other side of the continent from Sydney, as many as 24 men seized a young girl in a schoolyard and raped her repeatedly before scrawling anti-white slogans on her naked body. All of the victims have been white, and all of the rapists have been non-white. Police refuse to be specific, saying only that the members of the rape gangs are of Middle Eastern origin. Although a number of arrests of the rapists have been made, police are pessimistic about curbing the phenomenon or even slowing it down. They say it is a, quote, culturally institutionalized problem, which means that gang rape of women and girls not under the protection of a strong male is traditional in the home country from which the rapists come. Gang rape of unprotected women is an institution in the Middle East and among Semitic peoples generally. Police are hesitant to crack down on the rape gangs from fear of being charged with, quote, racial profiling, the same charge which has hamstrung police in America. So, in lieu of moving aggressively against the Middle Eastern immigrant groups to which the rapists belong, Australian police are planning a, quote, social research program to better understand the phenomenon. South Africa is experiencing similar problems with gang rape. Rape always has been culturally institutionalized among blacks throughout Africa, including South Africa. The new aspect of rape there is that now white women are increasingly being chosen as victims, whereas during the apartheid period, they were exempt because blacks feared aggressive police action and extremely severe punishment for raping a white woman. With a black government, that is no longer true. In fact, black police officials in South Africa look with amusement on rape complaints by white women. South Africa has become the rape capital of the world, with more reported rapes per capita than any other country, according to Interpol. South Africa also has the fastest rising per capita rate of HIV infection. The belief is widespread among blacks in Africa that they can cure AIDS by having sex with a woman who does not have the disease. They believe that sex with an uninfected woman will draw out the disease from their bodies and into the bodies of the women. Therefore, they seek out very young girls, presumably virgins and therefore uninfected, for rape. And they also seek out white women, among whom the infection rate is only a tiny fraction of the rate among black women. Racial hatred also plays a role in the growing incidence of the gang rape of white women in South Africa. Jean Saul lives with her husband just outside Johannesburg. Four blacks recently broke into their home, robbed them at gunpoint, then tied up both Mrs. Saul and her husband in their beds. They called Mrs. Saul a white bitch and then told her husband, "We've got AIDS and we're going to rape your wife." Then all four took turns raping her, forcing her husband to watch. After that, according to Mrs. Saul's report, and I quote, "One of the blacks stood on the bed and he actually peed on us, just urinated over both of us." France and Sweden both are experiencing a growing surge of gang rapes of young girls by non-white immigrants, not by blacks, but by Middle Easterners in Sweden and by North Africans in France. As in Australia, the police in France and Sweden seem hesitant to crack down vigorously on the rape gangs, simply because the rapists are all non-white. In England, the immigrants causing the worst problems at the moment are Asians, most of them from the Indian subcontinent. I spoke with you 2 months ago about the destruction that Asian gangs were wreaking in northern England. I spoke specifically about the Asian riots in Oldham, about the Asian gang attacks on whites there. Well, the riots have continued, primarily because the police have refused to crack down on the rioters. The mass media in England have tried hard to put the blame for the riots on white racism. And under the government of Tony Blair, who is a British version of Bill Clinton, the police in England are as afraid of racial profiling accusations as are the police in America. Last month, the heaviest rioting yet in England by Asian gangs hit the city of Bradford, near Leeds. White-owned stores in Bradford were looted and firebombed. 2 white men were stabbed, and more than 200 policemen were injured. Hundreds of millions of dollars worth of white property was destroyed or stolen. And what about America? Earlier this year, I spoke with you on several occasions about the black riots in Seattle and in Cincinnati. I pointed out that during the Mardi Gras riot in Seattle, the police stood on the sidelines and refused to interfere while gangs of blacks rampaged through a mostly white crowd, beating, robbing, and stomping individual whites, mostly young women, and killing one young white man who tried to help a young woman who had been knocked to the ground and was being kicked by blacks. The police explained that they had been using restraint in order not to provoke even worse violence. Actually, as was revealed later, they were afraid of being charged with racial profiling, because if they had arrested lawbreakers, nearly all of those arrested would have been black. As every living has learned from TV, blacks are no more likely to commit crimes of violence than whites, so arresting more blacks than whites during a riot is clear proof of police racism. The black rioting in Cincinnati in April also saw the police looking the other way while the blacks pulled whites from cars and beat them, looted stores, set buildings afire, and carried on in their customary way. The black pretext for rioting in Cincinnati was the shooting of a black criminal with 14 outstanding arrest warrants who was fleeing from police. The media in Cincinnati made such a hullabaloo about the fact that the fleeing criminal was unarmed at the time. The headlines read, "Unarmed black youth gunned down by white policemen," that the police and the city's white politicians became gun-shy. In an effort to deflect charges of racial profiling, they arrested a young white man who had thrown a brick at a black during the riot and charged him with a hate crime. Certainly the first hate crime charge to be filed as a result of the Cincinnati riot, and as far as I am aware, the only one. During the rioting, angry white citizens in the Cincinnati area were calling radio talk shows and asking why the police were refusing even to arrest black rioters who pulled a white woman from her car and beat and kicked her savagely. The television cameras caught it, but the police ignored it. The white mayor of Cincinnati, Charlie Lukens, obviously was scared to death that if the police waded into the rioters to rescue white victims, other blacks might be shot, and he would be blamed by the media. He refused to criticize the black rioters. He attended the funeral of the black criminal who had been shot. And his solution for preventing further rioting was, and I quote, "We must address the broader issues of racism and economic inclusion in our community," end of quote. After the riot in April and the anemic response of Cincinnati police, violent crime is up astronomically in the city. Since the riot, there have been 74 more shootings compared to 9 shootings in the same period last year. All but one of the gunmen in the 74 shootings since April was black. And while violent crime is way up, arrests in Cincinnati are down more than 50%. Clearly, Mayor Lukens is hoping to avoid provoking another black riot and more charges of racial profiling from the media. What he's doing now to try to curb violent crime in Cincinnati is recruit more black policemen. He believes that a more diverse police force will lead to less crime, or at least to less media criticism of him. This sort of reaction by white politicians to media charges of lack of sensitivity to blacks or other non-whites is not confined to Cincinnati. They are telling white cops to take it easy on blacks everywhere. On my desk, I have a Fox News story from last week, July 27th, headed, and I quote, "Seattle cops wary of race profiling accusations, cutting back on minority arrests." I also have a similar story, which was printed in the Seattle Times a month earlier. That story is headed, "Wary of racism complaints, police look the other way in black neighborhoods." I will quote a few lines from the story. "The cops on the street have different names for it. Depolicing, selective disengagement, tactical detachment. They even joke about it, calling themselves tourists in blue. Many officers, wary of being labeled racists or racial profilers, say they hold back or bypass opportunities to make traffic stops or arrests of black suspects." "It's real. It's happening," said Eric Michel, a Seattle patrol officer for 17 years. "Parking under a shady tree to work on a crossword puzzle is a great alternative to being labeled a racist and being dragged through an inquest, a review board, an FBI and U.S. attorney's investigation, and a lawsuit." The same Seattle policeman described a recent incident in which he stopped a car which was being driven recklessly. The driver appeared to be high on cocaine and was carrying no driver's license and had no registration document for the car. "Ordinarily," said Michel, "he would have arrested the driver on the spot. But the driver was black, and so Michel hesitated. Instead of making an immediate arrest, he went back to his patrol car to run the license plate through the police computer. It turned out that the car was stolen, but by that time, the black driver had fled." Well, I said that we would tie together all of these things and then draw some conclusions from them. What we have in each of these situations I have described for you is white men on the defensive, white men thinking and acting like women, white men so terrified of being criticized, so terrified of being called racists, that they will not protect themselves, their women, or their communities. They have let themselves be pushed into positions which are less and less defensible. Australia, for example, used to be a white country, in spirit as well as in fact. The government had a white Australia policy. Immigrants from non-white parts of the world simply were not accepted. That's the way the Australians wanted it, and the government was happy to oblige. In the late 1960s, however, the Jews, the controlled media, the Christian churches, and leftist elements in the Labor Party began collaborating on a long-range anti-racism propaganda campaign in Australia. It was the same sort of propaganda campaign that was used to soften up South Africa prior to turning it over to black rule. The formula was, racism is a terrible thing, and you should be ashamed if you have any racist feelings. Not permitting Asians and Middle Easterners to immigrate to Australia is racist. Or, in South Africa, not permitting blacks to vote is racist. Therefore, if you are in favor of keeping Australia white, you are a terrible person and should be ashamed of yourself. Or, if you are a white South African and don't want the black majority to vote, you are a terrible person and should be ashamed. By the mid-1970s, the campaign had had such an effect on Australians that they were afraid to protest when the government abandoned its white Australia policy and opened the floodgates to Asian and Middle Eastern immigrants. And by the early 1990s, white South Africans had been so intimidated by the anti-racist propaganda in their country that they were ready to commit collective race suicide rather than be considered racists. In 1991, they abandoned their system of apartheid. And in 1993, they agreed, in effect, to turn their country over to rule by the black majority. They agreed to let blacks vote so that they wouldn't be thought racists by the lemmings in other countries. As social conditions in Australia began deteriorating and the crime rate began rising under the impact of Asian immigration, the government pushed for a general disarmament of the white population. Everyone would be safer, the government and the media and the churches proclaimed, if no one had a firearm, and the feminized, brainwashed population put up only a minimal protest. Yes, yes, they wanted to feel safer. They wanted to be nicer. Let's get rid of those awful firearms. So in 1997, just 4 years ago, all privately owned firearms in Australia were confiscated by the government. Since then, there has been a 45% increase in the rate of armed robberies across Australia. In the state of Victoria, the rate of homicides committed with firearms has risen 300%. That's because the Asian gangs still have their guns, but the whites don't. It's really difficult to sympathize with white Australians and white South Africans. Through their own foolishness and weakness, they have brought their present problems upon themselves. When men began acting like women, that is what happens. When white men let themselves be bamboozled into feeling guilty and defensive about their natural, healthy racial feelings, that is what happens. I remember what happened in South Africa just a few years ago. The Christian churches there organized huge anti-apartheid demonstrations. The Jews were lurking in the background and pulling the strings, of course, but it was white Christians out front campaigning for an end to apartheid. It was Christian clerics denouncing racism from their pulpits and calling for interracial brotherhood. And the white lemmings soaked it up. I remember seeing the young white women, beautiful, empty-headed white women, marching in these demonstrations arm in arm with blacks. The white women were so proud of themselves for being ideologically fashionable, for being politically correct. And their men, their fathers, their husbands, their brothers, let them behave in this way rather than risk being thought racist themselves. And so now, the fashionable white women of South Africa are being raped and infected with the AIDS virus, and their spineless men are being forced to watch. foolishness and weakness. Foolish women and weak men. But is that not the way most of our people are everywhere, including the United States? Isn't that the way most of our people always have been? Isn't that why the Jews just love mass democracy and praise democracy to the skies in their media? It's easy for us in the United States to shake our heads at the foolishness and weakness of the Australians and the South Africans. It's easy for us to say to the Australians, you had a Bill Clinton, Tony Blair-style government, a government catering to the welfare rabble and to the worst of the lemmings. So how can you be surprised that your government abandoned your white Australia policy and now welcomes a growing flood of non-white immigrants into your country? The Asian immigrants will be the new constituency for your politicians. And you certainly can't complain that now you have no weapons to protect yourselves and your women from these immigrants. You were so afraid of being politically incorrect that you permitted the government to confiscate your firearms without even putting up a fight. Now you're getting what you deserve. It's easy for us to say that about the Australians and to say even harsher things about the South Africans. How could anybody be so stupid as to let a majority of the electorate in their country become non-white and expect their government to continue to protect them and to maintain civilized standards? It's easy to say these things because the Australian and South African situations seem so different from ours. It's a little harder for us to criticize the people in England for letting the Asians there riot and tear up their cities. The situation in England is a little too close to what we have witnessed in Seattle and Cincinnati. But you know, the situation in Australia really is not so different from ours as we might want to believe. Our government is just as democratic, just as corrupt, and the attitudes and opinions of our people are just as prone to manipulation by the media. We used to have a white America immigration policy here too. Under pressure from the Jewish media and the Christian churches, that policy was abandoned after the Second World War. Now our government doesn't even attempt to control our borders. It is more concerned that the mestizos pouring in from Mexico might lose their way in the Arizona desert and suffer from the heat than it is about keeping them out. The U.S. Border Patrol is planning on installing special signaling stations in the desert so that if the illegal aliens get lost on their way north, they can call for help. Really? I got that news from a July 28th Associated Press report from Tucson, Arizona, which is on my desk now. With that kind of thinking in our government, our situation in just a few decades will be very similar to that of South Africa's whites today. We will have a non-white voting majority in the country and a government staffed by a majority of non-whites who will be just as amused by our cries for help as are the black police officials of South Africa when white women there complain about being gang raped by blacks. And like the Australians, we will not have weapons to defend ourselves or our women. That's where we're headed everywhere in the white world. What is happening now in Australia and in South Africa gives us a clear warning. That warning will do us no good, however, unless we do something about our basic problem. That basic problem is the continued programming of our lemmings by mass media controlled by Jews. As long as the Jews who control America's mass media are permitted to continue teaching our women that frolicking with blacks is fashionable, and as long as they are permitted to continue teaching our men that being thought a racist is a fate worse than death, we will not be able to avoid the future the media bosses have planned for us. Because, believe me, our women are just as foolish and our men just as weak as are those of Australia and South Africa. The governmental structure is in place which will annihilate our race and our civilization. And the masters of the mass media are at the controls of this structure. Whether there is a Democrat or a Republican figurehead at the top of the structure makes very little difference. We must begin dismantling that structure. We must put a monkey wrench in its gears. We must yank, we must blast the controllers from their seats of power in Hollywood and New York, or we are finished. Thanks for being with me again today.
You have been listening to a presentation of American Dissident Voices. The speaker was Dr. William Pierce, chairman of the National Alliance. The program was sponsored as a public service by National Vanguard Books, America's foremost supplier of patriotic books and tapes. For $2, we'll send you our newest 72-page illustrated catalog with descriptions and ordering information for more than 600 books and tapes of interest to patriots. Many of the items in the National Vanguard Books catalog are available nowhere else. Our mailing address is National Vanguard Books, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.